Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Well, it happened again, and we're here to talk about it. Welcome to Scrambled Eggs, everybody. Your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with stiff drinks in our hands, ready to talk about our basketball team, who, let's put it as gently as I possibly can, Phil, did not have a great Saturday.
Oh, no. Well, first of all, welcome to the fully angry and partially drunk Scrambled Eggs podcast. Second of all, that was atrocious.
It was, I think I'm being kind if I call it anything other than embarrassing. You know,
yeah.
It seems that DePaul tends to do this to Marquette a lot. It's not necessarily just a Wojo thing, but it certainly has become a Wojo thing, is losing to DePaul and having your season on the brink. There's a lot of season left, or is there? Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later in the podcast, but let's talk with what is fresh in our mind, Phil, and I'll just put it to you simply, just to start us off. What the hell happened?
First of all, Wojo happened. Second of all, it was, I guess for me, I'm having trouble deciding which is worse, right? That abomination happened, or that abomination was entirely predictable to happen. Like, which is more significant? Because, like, that game was everything that Marquette has struggled with in the Wojo era. Slow start to both the first and the second half. Questionable coaching decisions from lineups. Seemingly no energy after a long break. You even mentioned it on Twitter, right? We've seen this game, this movie before. They get down. They get down further in the second half. They fight back. They get a lead to build up hope, only to then go and piss it all away because they make poor choices or do things like miss free throws. I knew the game was over with 2 minutes to go when DJ Carton, with Marquette with a two-point lead, had an opportunity to give Marquette a two-possession lead and clanked both free throws. It was inevitable from that point forward that Marquette was going to lose.
The too little too late rally is kind of a Wojo staple. When the team really starts taking things seriously and playing well, that has happened so many times, and they looked dead in the water for almost all of Saturday's game. And the crazy thing is they had a full week to prepare for the worst team in the Big East, and that's the performance you get. We can keep telling ourselves, it's a young team, they're building something, they're just got some things they're working on, they got young players they're depending on, but the fact is, this isn't the first time we've seen this in the Wojo era. We see this all the time, and I don't know what else to say other than I am just so done with Wojo, and I just wish there was a way that we could move on from him and try to move the program forward after this, but as has been well documented, the school has no money to do that, so we're kind of stuck with them for a while, it seems.
Yeah, well, and like, there's just inexplicable choices even within the game, right? Dawson Garcia, Marquette's leading scorer, took four shots in that game. Four. The last one, I think, and credit to Anonymous Eagle for pointing this out, the last shot Dawson Garcia, again, Marquette's leading scorer, took in that game was at the 12:54 mark in the second half. How do you not force feed him the ball? How do you not draw up plays for Dawson Garcia at some point, right? And on top of that, Justin Lewis, who, you know, is speculated as to be a, you know, speculated to have been scouted by NBA scouts, 22 minutes in that game. What are we doing?
What are we doing?
Like, what is it you say you do here? Like, we are common folk. Like, our basketball knowledge consists of what we read on the internet, what we watch on TV, and Recplex time when we were chucking, you know, shots in pickup games. Like, and it's obvious to us. How does Wojo, with 20 years of experience and, you know, significant hours playing the game, let alone coaching it, at the knee of, you know, Coach K, like, just seem befuddled all the time?
Yeah, the only guy who had any kind of significant offensive contribution was DJ Carton, who had an offensive rating of 119. He had 23 points in the game. You know, we talked on the last pod how we'd like to see a little more of Greg Elliott, because he tends to do pretty well when he's in there. He only got 12 minutes. That's the fewest minutes of anybody who actually played in the game.
And Samir Torrance got 4 more minutes than Greg Elliott. What world are we living in? Like,
I don't want to pick on Samir either, and I want him to be good. I just can't make the case that he is right now. Yes, I know he made a 3 in that game, but that doesn't change really my overall opinion of where he is as a player at this point in his career, and that my opinion that Greg Elliott is a better player than he is, and is going to give you more quality minutes than he is. I mean, Samir Torrance, even with that 1 made 3 on Saturday, he's still shooting 16% from 3 on the season, whereas Greg Elliott is shooting 45% from 3.
He went 0 for 3 in that game, right? So, like, yeah. Greg Elliott is shooting 45% after missing 3 shots in the DePaul game compared to, I'm sorry, you said 16%?
Yeah, he's 4 of 25, Samir is. Yeah, you know, Greg's got the best offensive rating on the team for the season at almost 120. Samir's is at 82%. Samir turns the ball over a lot. Now, Greg turns the ball over a fair amount, too, but not as much as Samir does. And Wojo just wants Samir out there for whatever reason and doesn't give Greg Elliott minutes. Even when Kobe was sitting for a spell there in the second half, that he just didn't see that as a time to get Greg out there. And the team just never seems to get in any kind of rhythm offensively, at least not today. There have been times when they are. You know, I joke, you know, every Marquette game, it seems like we've got 15 minutes of awful, 15 minutes of great, and then it's that 10-minute mystery box that determines the game. Mystery box can be anything. It could be more great. It could be more awful. It could be hilarious. And I'm not sure we get 15 minutes of great in this one. I think the mystery box was all awful.
It turned out the mystery box was a boat.
It could be a boat. And it was a boat with a hole in it, and it sank. I don't know how many ways I can say it was bad. It was a very poor performance, considering they had a full week to get ready for this DePaul team, and a team that is, what is it now on KenPom after that game? It is 100. They cracked the top 100, so that's super duper. They're 95.
Yeah, they're 95 now. Thanks to their defeat of Marquette, they are now better than 100. Yeah,
shout out to Anonymous Eagle who pointed this out. In DePaul's last 10 Big East games, they are 2-8. Guess who their 2 wins are against?
Hey, Marquette, keeping Dave Lato employed.
The only reason Dave Lato still has a job. Marquette basketball, and Wojo does too. But where do we go from here, Phil? Like, what could be salvaged? Do we want to dive any more into this game as far as what happened or what could be done differently in that game, in the DePaul game itself?
No, because I mean, I feel like a broken record, because all the same things that go wrong in every other game go wrong in this game. And, like, I don't know, do they not watch game film? Do they not talk about, let's not do this? Like, have they run out of balloons to pop to signify no more turnovers, right? Like, has Wojo's balloon supplier been like, I'm sorry, man, I just can't keep wasting balloons like this. You guys are cut off. I'm not sure what you're doing with all this latex, right? Like, there's nothing to talk about because it's the same thing over and over again, right? Like, even though they beat Providence and beat St. John's, they were carbon copies of what happened in that DePaul game. It's just that DePaul fought back at the very end, where seemingly St. John's and Providence went, I don't know. Maybe Marquette's not going to fold, and Marquette didn't fold.
Yeah, they had some turnover issues, especially in the first half where DePaul got on that 10-0 run. I think it was like about a 10-0 run in the first half. Marquette, mm-hmm. The turnovers were actually kind of equal in the game. DePaul had 11, and Marquette had 14 of their own, but it seems like...
Well, the crazy thing is DePaul turns the ball over, right? Like, DePaul is awful at turning the ball over on offense, and Marquette only got them to commit 11. Like, so Marquette does not cause turnovers and just walks down the street committing turnovers. Like, and again, it cost them the game.
It did. It did. And the offense just never really got any kind of rhythm outside of Carton. And he, like, even his 23 points kind of feel kind of empty, honestly, because you say, you know, he missed those free throws late in the game. Mm-hmm. And then he got, you really got nothing from anybody else. I mean, nobody else scored more than 8 points. And you already touched on Garcia being as quiet as he was, getting his, that's got to be Dawson Garcia's worst offensive rating of the season, huh? It was 47 in that game. That has to be his worst.
Yep.
I would guess without even looking.
Yep.
Ooh, close.
And Theo John wasn't particularly good either. Again, this is where I like, what game in the game, you know, if the theory of Wojo is that he rides hot hands, right? Like, and he adjusts on the fly. How do you watch Theo John in that game get blocked multiple times and keep force feeding the post with Theo John down there? Theo John played 28 minutes. Why, based on watching Theo John and Justin Lewis, could you articulate for me why Justin Lewis had 6 less minutes than Theo? Why would you not flip those two?
I don't know. You know, I think he, you know, I'm not saying this is right, but I guess Wojo's answer to that question would probably be something like, he trusts Theo as a senior, and what Theo gives you on the defensive end, he trusts him for that. And but I cannot give you a good reason as to why you keep feeding him, why you can't get more shots for Dawson, or can't get somebody else involved. And yeah, when it's not working for Theo, maybe would certainly understand you would want to try to get Justin some run in there to see if he can provide a spark, because Justin often does provide a spark when he comes off the bench. It's not that like he was particularly great. No one was really great in this game, but you would have liked to see a little more from everybody in this game. That's a team loss. And that's the thing that's the most frustrating. That's the thing that's toughest thing for me to swallow. It wasn't like a fluke win. DePaul thoroughly kicked Marquette's ass. Like, it was DePaul was the better team from the jump to the final buzzer. Marquette just got dominated by the worst team in the Big East.
Yep. And everything else, like the comeback in the second half is really just window dressing, right? Like we cannot overstress, like, that is a quad 4 loss for Marquette. And I think, like, as we transition away from the immediate reaction to the DePaul game and transition to the larger picture, you know, I don't think I was overstating. Some may. That was a must-win game for Marquette, and they didn't win it. Marquette is officially out of the NCAA tournament at this point. It will take a lot to get Marquette back into the NCAA tournament. Like,
Only nine scheduled games left, and this is something we emphasized at the end of last week's pod, Phil, is that, you know, mm-hmm. 9 scheduled games, that doesn't mean we're going to play 9 games. It might be 8. It might be 4. You know, God forbid Marquette has some kind of shutdown, you might lose a bunch of games. And you might – that's the tough thing about it. Almost every bracket has Marquette out leading into Saturday. I would assume every bracket in America would have Marquette out now, and
for sure
you've got to make up for that. And just beating Providence and Butler is probably not going to do it. You got to go out and you got to beat a really good team. Like, you got to beat Creighton again.
I will say this. I will say this for Marquette to get back on the right side of the bubble. I think they have to go. I would say they have to go 7-9, 7-2, maybe 6-3, depending on what the mix of wins and losses
yeah.
are. The minimum is they have to win 6 out of the next 9.
Nice.
If they even play all 9. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So do you think there are 6 wins out of the 9
let's,
that
let's,
are left?
Let's be a casual, like, just a tiny bit optimistic here. Providence okay. on the road, maybe. Let's say yes, they can win.
Yeah, I mean, they beat them once,
let's
right?
Say yes.
Let's say yes.
Butler at home, yes. At Creighton, no.
Yeah.
Or no, Creighton at home, Creighton still at home.
Yeah,
at Seton Hall, no. At Butler, no. You could get that one. So that's 3. Johnny's at home. You can win that one. That's 4. At Connecticut, probably not.
No way. DePaul at DePaul? No way.
At DePaul?
No way.
Probably not. Let's come back to at DePaul, and then you get Xavier at home. Maybe.
Nah.
Maybe. So bottom line is, I would say you're heading into those last two games completely desperate, needing to win them both. And that is just the perfect recipe for DePaul to crush all dreams and end it all right there on March 2nd.
DePaul's going to win 2 games in the Big East this year. Guess who they're going to be against?
God, that's going to be so embarrassing if DePaul goes on, what would that be, something like a 18-game stretch or something in Big East play? You know, God, it would be more than that. It might be something like 20 games in Big East play and only 3 wins, and they're all against Marquette. And it could happen.
Yeah, it could be real bad. Happen too. But entirely predictable. Yeah. So I think the point remains, assuming Marquette even plays 9 games, the odds are very much not in their favor to win 6. And quite frankly, you could probably make an argument that they won't win 5 of them.
Yeah, I mean, like...
Right? Like, if you're being pessimistic, Connecticut, Seton Hall, Creighton, those are clear, very not likely.
Yeah, and they're, you know...
Xavier, DePaul, and one of the Butlers feels challenging as well.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, not going off metrics, just going off, you know, feel and history, there's always something to be said for when a team gets their heart ripped out and you wonder if they're just done. And they, you know, I'm not saying they would lose them all, but just the total, you know, the wheels fall off and you know, go something like 2-8 or 2-7 down the stretch. And they're, and like...
Right.
The team's just spinning their wheels and they don't trust each other and they don't trust their coaches and say, look, this is a lost season. We're... You know, they may be looking at things right now and saying, all right, back's against the wall. Guys, we're not out of the tournament yet, but, we got to win them all right now. And maybe you could talk yourself into firing yourselves up and getting refocused that way. But too many more losses, then reality sets in. Like, when you really, really know we're not going to the tournament. And when that sets in, then the wheels would really fall off and you could lose a bunch in a row.
Yeah, I mean... Honestly, like, DePaul was a must-win. We didn't win it. But, like, Providence, if they lose the Providence game, especially if they do it in this, like, go down a bunch, come back, maybe get a chance, but then give it all away at the late at the end of the game fashion. Like, I think if they lose that Providence game, I think they go on, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 game losing streak, right? Like, I don't think they win again until perhaps Butler or St. John's, if even those games, right? Like, I just, that's the sense I get of this team is for whatever reason, if you can't get up against DePaul after a week of rest and like neat and having an opportunity to win 3 in a row with another couple of winnable games on the schedule so you can really start to be momentum. If none of that energizes the team enough to beat the worst team in the Big East, bar none, then, like, how are you going to get up for any of these other games after the DePaul loss? And I quite frankly, I would go with the alliteration and say the DePaul debacle. Like, there's no other way to put it.
These guys, they, you know, out of the cliche, although the coach cliche is, we try to win every game. We take every game seriously. One game at a time. We're just focused on the next opponent trying to win that game and go 1-0 every game. You know, I get that. But these guys aren't just totally ignorant of what their record is and what the temperature is around the country as far as who's on the bubble and who's not. They know what their record is and where they stand in the Big East. They know what the Big East standings are. They can't not know that. So they have to know that every win is precious right now and that they've got to they need to take this DePaul team seriously. And they needed to win that game, and they didn't get it done, and they just played terrible. And it's on every player on that team and every coach on the staff. And they need to look themselves in the mirror here and wonder, you know, what are we doing?
We've always had this discussion around, well, Wojo doesn't execute the plays, right? Wojo doesn't, you know, do whatever, right? Like, the players have to play and win the game. Don't disagree, but like, at what point, when your team is flat and not even the announcers were talking about how much energy DePaul, winless in the Big East, how much more energy on Marquette's home court DePaul had than Marquette? At some point, that is not on the players. That is on the staff for not getting them ready for the game or not recognizing that they need to be motivated in a different way going into that game. Like, this is a program that spends in the top 15 of the country. And to have that program then come out flat and stay flat for most of the game. Now, I want to give full credit, right? Kobe McEwen, that play where he dove and, you know, and Marquette was down 8 and struggling to get closer. And then Kobe McEwen dove for the steal and gets it to DJ Carton, who goes and dunks it. And, like, those were energetic plays. And that's the frustrating thing. Where was that energy at the start of the game? And quite frankly, where was that energy in the last 3 minutes? Everyone panicked in the last 3 minutes, including the coaching staff. How do you not, when you're down 4, how do you not tell everyone on your team, don't jack threes, get points? If you got a good look, fine, but do not jack threes. And 3 possessions in a row, 2 of them with DJ Carton, they jacked threes outside of the flow of the offense, and that's when you knew the game was over.
Saimir made one, and then he took 2 terrible ones after that.
Right. Well, I contend that the rotation of his shot defies physics. I have no idea how the ball spins the way it spins out of his hand, but yeah, he hit that one and then decided, yeah, you know what? I'm shooting less than 20%. Let's jack a couple more. This is what I've been waiting for.
This is a game where I wonder how having fans may have affected this game, because, like, there may have been a lot of groaning and borderline booing early on, but when you make that run and you get it close or even take the lead, that's when it gets loud in there, and that's when the visiting team tends to panic. But on the other hand, this is another shining example of why it's probably best for Wojo this year that there are no fans, because they would have booed him off the court today.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Like,
I would honestly have been embarrassed to be in the arena because of the way I assume everybody would have reacted after that loss, because it would have been loud, harsh booing as the team walked off the court. And I hate that for the kids. Because I like the players. I hate that for the players. Because I still like the players. But the coaching staff deserves to hear those boos. And it's good for them that they don't have to hear any boos this year. They, you know, if they stay off social media, they may not even have any idea how unhappy the fans are. They probably think, well, we're still building. We'll get there. It's best for the coaches that there are no fans this year, because it's best we stay apart for a while.
Yeah, that's the thing that I don't, I mean, we've talked about the financial implications and all that other thing. How much awareness, you know, because you don't have those tangible things, like you said, if Lovell and Skoll are staying off social media, and I'm sure they're only talking to, you know, they're not talking to the common fan, right? Without the fans in the arena. And I am never a boo your own team, But I'm telling you right now, if I was in the arena and saw this game, given and everything else stayed the same, you know, no pandemic, but everything else was the exact same, I would have been booing tonight. Again, not the players.
Yeah, again.
The staff. At some point, you have to hold the adults in the room to account.
You do.
But I worry that, like how much of Marquette leadership knows what's going on, like, in terms of
the dissatisfaction. Yeah, do they think it's bad? Like, are they really thinking, you know,
right,
we need to make a move? And I know, again, it's well documented that Marquette is struggling financially, and the optics of spending millions to buy out a basketball coach when you are making cuts across your university is very poor. But, you know, I'm not saying they're going to make a move, but there's got to be somebody somewhere at Marquette University who is running some numbers and the pros and cons of, you know, looking 5 years out of, like, what if we made a coaching move? Obviously, it would be terrible now, but would this be beneficial in the long run? I don't think they would, because, again, it just seems so unlikely, both financially and via optics. Again, if you're laying off staff and laying off, you know, teachers and furloughing other employees at the school, you can't buy out your multi-million-dollar basketball coach. It's just the optics are so poor, and I hate that. But that's the thing that kind of sucks is, if the pandemic weren't a thing, this would be the perfect time to make a move. You know, I
would argue if the pandemic weren't a thing and everything else was equal, right? And let's assume, for the sake of argument, Marquette got a bid last year and went on and lost that first game. I feel very strongly that was likely. Like, this is a fireable offense tonight, right? The way this season has gone and all the seasons before it, after what happened tonight, that is, in a normal season,
I would think, correct? It would be trending in that direction. I think you would have to be blind to the facts, especially if you've got an arena full of fans who are booing, and you know, that was happening last year, right? And they altered team intros last year to kind of douse the booing, if you recall. Like, it was like, and guard number zero, Marcus Howard, and the Golden Eagles are coached by Steve Wojciechowski, and now the sixth man of the Golden Eagles, the Marquette student section, and they just kind of blew right by Wojo, so people couldn't boo him. But I think with fans there, I think the feeling would be hard to ignore that it would be time for a change. And, you know, the thing that sucks, you know, even with the pandemic, if the financials weren't what they were, it would be a perfect time to do it, because next fall, we damn sure better have fans in the arena again. Otherwise, what a colossal failure we would be dealing with if we can't have fans come next October.
Right. And I mean, Marquette is already hemorrhaging money. They can't have another season with no fans.
But, like, say,
shut down the program.
With fans coming back next year, if you could have a new coach with new energy and a reason to encourage people to get out and spend their money and come back to the court, they would just be grateful for whoever's there, even if the team is bad. Like, because, you know, obviously if you made a coaching move, you would probably lose a bunch of players, especially if they can transfer right away and play right away. You might lose all the really good young players. But other than that, it would be it's never a good time to fire a coach, because you're always going to take a step back when you do that. But what's going to be done eventually should be done immediately, and that's why, again, if the financials were there, you should make that move this year. But unfortunately, the financials do not appear to line up, and we just have to keep crossing our fingers that Wojo magically turns this thing around somehow, or just treads water to the point that it's watchable until the financials do make sense and a move can be made. But that's just kind of where we are right now, is we're just kind of treading water as a fan base, saying, look, this is where we are. We're not going anywhere as a program. No matter how many 4-star, 5-star prospects he brings in, this is where we are every season, is middle of the pack in the Big East with little to no hope of doing anything in March. You know, we love to beat our chest that, like you said, we're a top 15 spending program in the country. And that, you know, like, we love to say, we spend more than anybody on basketball. Well, sure doesn't turn out results like a top 15 program. I don't think any neutral analyst in the country would, if you asked them to list their top 15, top 20 programs in America, I don't think any of them would list Marquette.
No, I at this point, I'd be shocked if somebody listed Marquette as a top 30 program. Well, there's a couple of things, right? Like, so let's think about this. There is some risk on the, like, let's assume the financials could work out to get rid of Wojo, right? There is risk there because we are in uncharted waters where, I mean, we may be entering an era where player transfers are becoming what you might call free, right? Like, we've already seen waivers up to, you know, DJ Carton got a waiver that 5 years ago never would have happened, right, to play right away this season. Jose Perez, you know, little scene, boy, that was a waste of a waiver. You know, got a waiver that never would have happened before. So given the pandemic environment, if you will, like, there is a very real possibility that if you fired Wojo, that everyone on the roster could leave if they so chose without too much in the way of penalty.
I guess the flip side of that is you could rebuild quickly too. Now, you might be bringing in mid-major players to fill out your roster, but you go pick the Ohio Valley clean, right? just try to pick a bunch of guys off who just want to get a little more playing time.
Well, whatever coach you hire, have them bring all of their players.
That's ridiculous. I mean, it sounds harsh, but let's say, I can't think of a good example off the top of my head, but like a mid-major coach who's dominating his league and goes undefeated, he could literally bring his whole team. And that team may not be good enough to win you any games in the Big East, but at least he would have a starting point to at least have a competent team in his first season as the new head coach. Who knows? The NCAA may do something to prevent something like that, put some kind of rules in place as far as, I don't know, transfers from one school to another or something. I don't know. But the free transfer thing seems to be coming. But I see what you're saying. Like, you would probably lose, when you fire a coach at a place like Marquette, you would probably lose. There's a chance you could lose the entire Big East roster, and the only guys who stay might be the guys who hardly played last year and are just excited to play. I can start. I can start.
Right.
And then the
Jose Perez, you're starting. Yeah, you're starting.
Yeah, so they would be starting next year. But again, that's not happening. But I get what you're saying. But we're probably not going to be dealing with that this offseason, but we may be dealing with it in two or three offseasons from now.
Yeah, well, and the thing that's going to be interesting, we talked about optics, right? And again, let's assume, I mean, is there a 0% chance that Wojo's fired after this season? No, but it's extremely unlikely. But what's going to be interesting, right, is what is the tightrope that the Marquette leadership has to walk, right? Because Wojo has, 2 years left on his contract?
I think it's a little more. I want to say he's always wanted to be able to tell the recruits that he's going to be there. So he might have four right now, I think.
Okay. And that's kind of where I'm going, right? So after this season, he'll have, let's say, 3 years left on his contract. And for the sake of stability, if you need Wojo to be able to claim on the recruiting trail, I'm here for the long haul. The entire time you are at Marquette, I will be there. That means Marquette has to extend Wojo in this offseason, right? Right? So how does Marquette leadership, even if they recognize 100% that, like, this is somewhat of a sinking ship, our backs are against the wall, financially we can't do anything, it's almost the worst of all worlds, because not only can you not signal that you know, like, Wojo's, like, or let me rephrase, not only can you not fire Wojo because of his inability to coach the game, you cannot even signal to the fan base that you get it. You actually have to go the opposite direction and extend Wojo, which makes the fan base think you are giving him a vote of confidence in his ability to coach. And that is, it's kind of like a when you're flying, it's called being behind the power curve. When you actually try and put more engine power into it, you actually go slower. It's laws of physics. We don't need to get into it.
Over my head, but go ahead.
But the point, but the point remains, this is actually the makings potentially of a bit of a death spiral, because not only like the fan base is ready to revolt to a certain extent. I don't think it's just the Twitter sphere that is upset with Wojo.
Yeah, I don't buy that when people say, right? Oh, yeah, real life isn't Twitter. You guys were booing at the arena last year, so don't tell me it's just Twitter.
Right. Right. Like, the hashtag MUBB is not 100% of the fan base at the games. You know, they're not 100% of the people in the stands at Fiserv Forum. So this whole, well, you know, Twitter isn't real life. I agree, but I tell you what, the fan base generally, not just the ones on Twitter, are pretty upset with this administration. So, like, if you're going to go ahead and have to extend Wojo, which if you don't fire him, I agree you do, you're just signaling to the fan base, well, it doesn't matter, he's doing fine, which is going to disincentivize the fan base to come back. And Marquette, you know, President Lovell has talked on calls that Marquette basketball is hemorrhaging money simply because they are putting on, you know, they are playing games, but they are not getting the revenue from fans and season tickets and all that, right? They're running a deficit. That's the pandemic world. But if you further frustrate the fan base, the fan base doesn't return next year when you can have fans. And so that revenue slips away, putting you further and further into a hole. So I would not give anything on this world to be President Lovell and Bill Scholl right now, because you fire him and incur those optics, or you keep him, which means extending him, which means you make less money. So I don't know how you like ninja your way out.
That's what I was kind of talking about with that cost benefit analysis of, do you think, like, how empty do you think Fiserv is next season with Wojo coaching? Versus, do you think you're selling it out if you have a new coach? But thing is, you're going to be paying that new coach quite a bit if it's a home run hire that you think is, I don't know who a home run hire would be. I'm not going to get into that on this pod. But if you think you're going to get a big hire that's going to sell out the arena next year, does that make up the deficit for what it's going to cost, what it would cost to buy Wojo out? And you know, the only thing I could say about a Wojo extension, yeah, it probably happens for that silly reason of like, well, I need to be able to tell the recruits I'm here. Well, I guess, but I don't know if you know if you necessarily need that, but I guess apparently you do because you hear that from coaches all the time. But all I could say is maybe you could give him an extension with some kind of clause for a lower buyout that maybe you can afford in a year or two.
For sure.
So I think, I don't know why Wojo would sign that, because I wouldn't sign anything that makes it easier to fire me. But maybe that just maybe the stalemate, you know, the standoff in the negotiating room is like, you want 5 years, we'll give you 5 years, but you got to give us this buyout. And you got to...
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, Marquette has to go into that negotiation saying, all right, we'll extend you, but if in turn for us extending you 5 years, we have to be able to fire you next year without too much financial, like, after the season, right? Like, that's the
either that, or you got to get really dirty like Connecticut did with Kevin Ollie and just find some recruiting violation and investigate yourself and fire him for cause. That, or do what Tennessee did with Pruitt.
I would. If I was Marquette, why don't you pay someone to drop a bag off at a player, and have that person show up on a I'm here from Wojo.
Yeah, just go
show.
Like just right? Go to the, like somebody, one of the assistants. It's like, hey, look, man, we need you to commit this recruiting violation, get Wojo fired, and we'll keep you on staff next year. that's dirty pool. But I've been drinking. I'm sorry.
I'm here for it. Like we have nothing but bad choices, right? And keep in mind, I am always optimistic. Like,
yes.
And like nothing good is happening right now, nor will it happen in at least the next 24 months. Like,
that's the thing I hate, because I do like the players, and you know, individually I like Dawson Garcia. I think Carton is an explosive point guard. Justin Lewis has been great, but I can never forget who their coach is. I can never get past that. That's why when a Marquette fan on Twitter was kind of pushing back on my pessimism, says, I bet Marquette's going to finish above 600 in the Big East. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
I don't like betting against my team, but that's easy money. And like, what, right. what do they have to go? Well, I don't want to do the math right now, but they're 4-5. Does winning out even, am I even a loser if they win out? I think I would lose if they lost, if they won. I would lose if they won out.
Yes, you would. Yes. Well, and you and I are both in that bet. Like, so assuming they play 18 games, I'd have to do the math.
See, what's 10 out of 18? Let's see. 10 out of 18. Yeah, that's below 500. So they.
Boy, I'm really glad people turned in.
So that would be. So they need to go. They go 6-3.
They need to win 11
games.
Need to
go, if they go 6-3, we still win that bet. And so, so 11.
Yes, which we just talked about. Like, there's almost no chance they go 6-3 to win the bet. To win the bet. And again, for all intents, this bet is to charities.
Yes, yes.
Right? Like, we're not actually profiting off of Marquette losing. It's going to charities. But for us to lose that bet, Marquette would have to go 7-2 in the remaining
games. So, in other words,
I would triple down on this bet. Right,
so in other
now.
Words, let's say they lose Creighton and Connecticut. That means they have to win all of Providence, Butler, Seton Hall, Butler, Connecticut, Providence, Butler, Seton Hall, Butler, St. John's, DePaul, Xavier. Got to win them all.
Well, we know they're going to lose the DePaul game. That's the only thing keeping Dave Leto employed.
I might put a significant money, whatever the line is, that DePaul game. I just might put it all on DePaul. Put it all on.
Yeah, DePaul cannot be favored to not wager on
might
DePaul.
Might be the first and only time in my life I take a DePaul money line. I would do it.
Oh my god! Oh, we'd have to go to Gamblers Anonymous afterwards, but we'd get money. Yeah. We'd win. Oh god! Like this is where we are. And again, I enjoy the players. I like the overall culture of the team, right? Like, take the on the court stuff off the table, which is weird when you're talking about basketball. But like that, I like that it's a clean program. I like the players that are being recruited. I think there's talent on this roster. That's the frustrating thing. I think this team is, if not the most talented roster Wojo has, it's certainly the second most talented roster Wojo has. And this is what he's doing with that talent. Like, you cannot.
And that's the thing I was wondering on Twitter after the game. At some point, his goodwill on the recruiting trail has to run dry, right? Like he's landed a bunch of really high 4-star guys. He's landed a couple 5-star guys. He has the recruiting class coming in next year is decent. One guy, Jonas Adu, we didn't talk about him last week, but he shot up in the latest rankings. He's like top 30 in the country now. So they have a nice recruiting class coming in. But at some point, I don't know when, but some of these 4- and 5-star guys who are considering Marquette are going to look at it and like, this guy never won.
Why? Why would I go there? Anything.
It reminds me of my my grandfather, just to a little aside here. The manager's name was Gene Mauch, right? That was his name. He was like a manager of the Phillies. Anyway, he was the manager of the Phillies. And he was the engineer to an infamous collapse of the Phillies a long time ago, right? And he was always hailed as a strategic genius in the baseball world. And he his team. His team had that infamous collapse in the 60s, and they never won anything. And then he went to the Angels, and they had an infamous collapse as well. My grandfather, he was always joking about Gene Mauch. He said, "There goes the strategic genius who never won shit." And that's kind of where I am with Wojo right now. Everyone says he's one of the best in the business. He's got a great pedigree. He's coached under Coach K. The recruits like him. He does well on the recruiting trail. They say this program's going in the right direction, but man, we got to get some skins on the wall at some point, right? Like, there's got to be something to hang our hats on to say, yeah, he is doing a great job. And it's just not there, and I'm not sure it's coming. And I'm just wondering when on the recruiting trail people are going to start pointing that out to these coaches and these four or five-star guys and say, do you want to play for him? Like, is that a program you want to play for? It's got to dry up at some point.
Right. Well, here's the thing I struggle with, right? Like, and this is why I sometimes feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Like, we talked about Marquette Twitter isn't the real world. But at what point do the national writers, you know, your Jeff Goodmans, your Seth Davis, right? Like, the national media pundits in college basketball, when do they start going? Because I don't know that I've seen it. And if someone's seen it, I'd love to hear about it. Like, when do they start going, what's Wojo doing in Milwaukee? Like, why is Wojo struggling so much at Marquette? Like, everyone in the national media, and maybe this is a reflection on how far Marquette has fallen, like, I don't see a lot of concern or even care from the national college basketball writers.
Yeah, like, I think just Marquette is just not a program that, when things are going bad, that it's in the mind of the national media that, well, this is not the way it's supposed to be. We got to fix this. If, you know, if Kentucky is losing, if Duke is losing, if Kansas is losing, if North Carolina is losing, that raises some eyebrows, or Indiana's losing. That stuff raises eyebrows, and they say, well, this is not the way this program's supposed to be. Like, we got to make a change there. The list of schools where that is a constant discussion is relatively small. I don't think Marquette quite registers there of, like, when they're losing, people around the country who are not invested in the program are going to say, that's not right what's going on there. There needs to be a change. And it just doesn't quite register as far as that's a program that we need to be good nationally. It just doesn't. And I think in the minds of national followers, Wojo does just enough to say, that's good enough. We don't need to go after him. Yeah,
right.
We don't need to do a hot seat ranking on him. Yeah, he's 6th, 7th in the Big East. We're not going to do it there. You know, so.
Right.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, Wojo will never. I have been on the record. I've said Marquette's never going to win a Big East title under Wojo, but they're also never going to bottom out. They're never going to be 11th and 10th every year. Because that's when the eyebrows are raised. Like, if Marquette were to hypothetically finish in last place in the Big East 3 straight years, then people would start saying, boy, that's terrible. That's way bad for Marquette. They need to make a change there. Wojo, at least now, he's got enough talent. He's always going to have enough talent on the roster that they're going to be able to finish 8th or higher pretty much every year. And for that reason, he'll never bottom out to get to the point where people nationally is like, wow, they're doing really terrible. He's just always going to kind of be middle of the road. He's never going to win a Big East title. I'm pretty confident saying that. But he's also, I don't think he's ever going to bottom out and finish last in the Big East.
Boy, I mean, of all the years, this would be the year, though, right?
Yeah. The thing is, even if he does finish last, he's still going to keep his job.
Oh, absolutely. And, like, you're 100% correct. I'm not disputing that at all. Well, I mean, Marquette is just, we spend like a drunken sailor. We have had an embarrassment of riches in the previous two coaching staffs in terms of performance and top-line outcomes, right? I mean, there's been questionable, shady behavior, and I get that, right? But, like, the Wojo era is like the worst combination of lackluster performance while not garnering any attention, right? Like, if we were struggling like this and the national media was like, what's wrong with Marquette? At least I'd feel like people care. But like, other than our realm of immediate fans, I feel like no one cares. And it hurts. I don't know what to say. It
would be nice to be relevant, but I think we're all,
I'm just a boy standing here asking the national audience to love us. That's
they're
all.
Just so damn hard to love.
I was gonna say there's nothing lovable about them, but that's not true. I really do like the player.
Yeah, like I said, if you take away the on-court stuff, the team is very likable. The kids are likable. Right. They're doing their social justice thing with the Coaches for Action. They're wearing the Black Lives Matter patches on the jerseys, and they're active in their communities. They're likable kids. They do well. I think the graduation rate is of course high, and their team GPA is good, and they're all likable kids, likable guys. It's just the wins aren't there, and that's. That's on
right. They are doing everything great except for the whole winning.
Aside
basketball.
From the on-court stuff, it's great. It really is. But
well, that's why you have a basketball program, right? The off the court stuff.
Champions in life. Who was it who said that? Who got? I think it wasn't Pruitt, but it was the coach before Pruitt at Tennessee football who said we're going to be champions in life, and people like hang the banner, champions in life.
Hey, well, maybe we should start trying to bite some kneecaps.
Yeah,
let's
just, we get kicked in the teeth.
Have we tried that?
Start biting kneecaps. Maybe we'll be the last team that says, whatever. But, going forward, Phil, as we kind of put a bow on this, going back to kind of what we were saying earlier is that the big concern, and I think why there's so much anxiety over this loss to DePaul, is we're not sure if these games later are going to get played. So you may not get all these opportunities to make up for this and win 9 games or win 8 games to really get yourself on the good side of the bubble. And, Matt Norlander reported this week there's a concern within college basketball that the sport may have to go on pause because, we have a new president of the United States now and the new administration, not to get too into politics on this podcast, but they're going to treat this virus a little differently than the previous one. And, who knows? There may be another national shutdown or maybe a partial shutdown of non-essential things like sports. That's certainly on the table. Would it shock me if that happened? Not at all. And if that happens, we may not have basketball in February. It's possible, or at least for a few weeks. And if the NCAA has to shut down, I don't know if they would make those games up, if they would push the tournament back and do April or May. I think it would be wise to have contingency plans to have a tournament in April, a tournament in May, or a tournament in June. I think hopefully you never have to use them, but I think it would be a good idea to have those contingency plans because who knows what's going to happen over the next 6 to 8 weeks in college sports.
Yeah, we are in uncharted waters to be sure. And it doesn't look good for the team in blue and gold. And it's not enjoyable.
And who knows, maybe they'll win against Providence and Butler next week, and we will be just as excited as we have ever been. And we'll be talking about the Final Four at this time next week.
I don't know. I mean, they might win those games, but I'm definitely not going to be thinking that we've turned
I misspoke. It's Providence on Wednesday, and then they have next weekend off, and their next game after that is Tuesday. So they only have one game.
Well, they're going to lose that Tuesday game because we don't. We have to play every 3.5 days, or we're just not
rusty.
Good.
It's the rust and rest thing. We just can't get that happy balance, and it's a damn shame. Should we put a bow on this thing? We done here.
I think we've done enough damage.
We should just go back to our drinks and go back to our holes and let the folks respond to what we've said. if you would like to do that, you can find us on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23 at Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You go to cracksidewalks.com. We post the podcast there. Please rate, review, and subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And we also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. I would advise everyone get some Arby's. To get you through the next few weeks. Phil and I recorded this on Saturday, so we can just focus on Championship Sunday. By the time many of you listen to this, maybe the football games will be over. But Phil, before those games get started, good luck to your Packers. Maybe we will have a Scrambled Egg Super Bowl to talk about next week instead of our basketball team.
It certainly would be preferred to talking about Marquette basketball at this point. I welcome the repeat of Super Bowl I, if at all possible.
Who knows if that's going to happen. The way the weekend has started, I'm bracing for Bills-Bucks. But good luck. Hopefully we have that to talk about next week, and maybe we can deflect a little. And hopefully they can maybe this Marquette team can maybe lift our spirits by surprising us against Providence on Wednesday. But maybe not. Eat at Arby's. Seashells and balloons, everybody.